The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
We can think of our practice. Often the notion of a path is offered for spiritual practice. And I think we can think of it as a kind of a journey, a journey inward, an inward journey, kind of a journey to get to know thoroughly, really thoroughly get to know who we are. If we think about our usual notion of a journey, it usually has a starting point and an ending point. And there's often directions for how to get there, maybe some tools we'd have to support us on our journey, a map and a compass, some directions. And so while some aspects of this metaphor of a journey are useful, the notion of having a destination or starting at a particular place and getting someplace else, that particular notion of journey isn't quite the way a spiritual journey unfolds. It's more like we're making a journey into, thoroughly into now. So we're starting it now. That's all we have. We only have a now. And we are exploring how can we more thoroughly open to now. Sometimes Gill says, you know, normally in a journey we're going from A to B, and in this journey we're really going from A to A. We're just more thoroughly understanding what does it mean to be here. And so really this spiritual journey is about landing here. What does it mean to open to being here in this moment? And maybe that sounds easy. You know, it's not that difficult in a moment to just be here, to know, yep, here I am, I'm sitting here in this room, maybe have some sense of body sensation, some sense of, you know, presence here. And yet there's so much, so many ideas and agendas and views and opinions and beliefs and prejudices and confusions and wants that obscure really meeting what's actually here. So this journey inwardly, it is helpful to have some tools, some supports for this journey, much as we have a map and a compass for an outer journey, and much as things can go wrong on an outer journey, we can get lost and confused as we explore what does it mean to actually open up to being here. And so having some tools, kind of equivalent tools for this journey, so exploring this, one way to look at this this journey into now, journey from A to A, is that we are really thoroughly opening to things as they are. things as they actually are in this moment. And so much the way we meet our experience, and this is points to some of the views, the beliefs, the agendas, the ideas we have. So much of how we actually meet what's here is we meet what we want to meet. We meet what we want to see. And so we're exploring not what's actually here, but more what we want to be here or what we think is here. So it is a challenge, actually, to begin to look into this mind, this body. I mean, there's so many parts of ourselves that we just do not want to be there. Parts of ourselves that we would just rather not look at. And this journey asks us to open to the entirety of who we are. All of the messiness, all of the confusion, all of the beauty, all of the joy, all of the love. Actually, sometimes I find opening to the joy and the love can be hard too, surprisingly. And so it takes courage, it takes patience, it takes resolve to do this work. A sense of commitment, of dedication. So this is the topic I'd really like to explore this evening, resolve. It's one of these 10 qualities that I've been exploring over the last number of weeks. The 10 paramis, the 10 beautiful qualities, perfections. Sometimes parami is translated as perfection or supreme quality. And there are 10 qualities that support us on our journey, actually. And they support us on this path. And they are generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, patience, energy, truthfulness, determination or resolve, the one I'd like to talk about today, loving kindness, and equanimity. The Buddha talked about this journey, this path of practice in so many different ways. It's almost like he offered a different kind of exploration for different perspectives or different personalities. He offered the Eightfold Path, for example, as one framework for the practice, the path of practice. And another framework that is offered is a framework of 4 resolves. And so since resolve is the topic, this is the main teaching that the Buddha offered around resolve, is this kind of framework of what is the orientation that we take to being on this journey? You know, in a spiritual journey, we need to have a sense of our direction. We have to have an aim or a sense of where we're going. So that's our map, essentially. You know, where are we going? This is just not about resolve in the abstract, but resolve for a particular purpose. Resolve to undertake this journey into this moment. Resolve to open to what is actually here. And so the framework of the 4 resolves is, he offered, there's the resolve of wisdom. Or he also, the word resolve, the Pali word is aditana, and it can be basically the Pali word means something like stand firmly with. And so it might be translated as determination or resolve. Sometimes it's translated as foundation also. So where do we stand? Where do we take a stand? And where we take a stand, the first resolve is with wisdom. And not just any wisdom, but the wisdom of what is it that allows us to open to being here more thoroughly? The wisdom of what does it mean to understand how our minds kind of get caught in struggle, in suffering? The wisdom of the Buddha is framed around his own journey, which was, is it possible to be free of suffering? He explored this question. Is that possible? Is it possible to have freedom from the way that we suffer in this world? And so his journey was that question. And all of his teachings kind of frame around an answer to that question. So the wisdom of the Buddha is expressed in terms of that question. So the one of the key framings of that wisdom is there is suffering. You know, this life, anybody here never experienced suffering? You know, this is just part of being human. It's just part of the human condition. And that's the first noble truth, that yes, this is part of what it means to be human, that suffering happens. Suffering, there's the suffering, mostly what we experience, the suffering around is reactivity to what's happening in the world. There's the kind of objective pain that happens in our lives. You know, unpleasant sensation will happen. Cut ourselves with a knife, we'll experience pain. Fall down, break a leg, there'll be pain. That's not the kind of suffering that the Buddha was trying to find freedom from. He was exploring what might it be possible to be okay and not reactive to the conditions of the world. And so the suffering that we're looking at finding freedom from is this reactivity to what's happening in the world. So a kind of a peace, an ease, an equanimity, a balance of mind. Is that possible? In the midst of chaos, in the midst of presidential politics, is it possible to have ease and balance and equanimity? Is it possible? The Buddha's own journey said that it is possible. And that balance of mind, I have to say, you know, the balance of mind that he points to, in my understanding, it's not a balance of mind that means passivity or non-action. It's a balance of mind that allows for a response to come from wisdom and from love and from compassion, a response to suffering rather than a reaction out of aversion and greed and confusion. So this is what he says is possible. This is the wisdom that he taught. What he said is it is possible to have this kind of freedom. It is possible to find ease in the midst of whatever conditions are happening. And that ease won't mean that you're just sitting there in the midst of chaos. It probably means you're going to be acting in the midst of chaos. But not out of hatred and not out of fear and not out of confusion. This is the possibility he holds up for us. This is possible. So this is the wisdom he points to, this freedom that he points to, and the wisdom that it's possible. So this second noble truth, the first noble truth is there is suffering. The second noble truth is that the cause of the suffering that is possible to have freedom from is this reactivity. It's the mind that is pushing things away and wanting to hold on, or is spinning in confusion, as opposed to the mind that can actually land here and know very thoroughly, this is what's happening right now. Mostly what happens when we take in what's happening right now is, if it's a pleasant something, we like it, we want more of it. We're kind of tilting off balance, trying to get more of it. If it's unpleasant, we don't like it, we either want to push it away, we want to lash out, annihilate it, or we want to get ourselves out of here, out of fear. And so again, there's a kind of a reactivity, an off-balance stance when there's something unpleasant that's happening. That's our typical response to the world. And often in that, there is confusion. The mind unable to decide what to do, unable to know how to act. And so this is our typical way of being in the world, and it creates a mind that is not balanced, not at ease in this moment. By definition, a mind that is reactive is not balanced and not at ease in this moment. And so this is the cause of the suffering that it's possible to be free from, possible to be free from that reactive suffering. The third noble truth is the Buddha's statement that, yes, it is possible to be free from that reactivity. And the fourth is this, the Eightfold Path. So this is the wisdom, the first foundation, one way of expressing that wisdom. This wisdom, this resolve of wisdom is, it's kind of got layers to it, you know. In the sutta where the Buddha talked about this set of resolves, actually I'll say them all now. It's the resolve for truth, I mean the resolve for wisdom, resolve for truth, resolve for relinquishment, and a resolve for peace. And he said we should not neglect wisdom. We should preserve the truth. We should cultivate relinquishment, and we should train for peace. And so this is the map, one of the maps he offered us. And so not neglecting wisdom, what does that mean, not neglecting wisdom? In the sutta, in the teaching where he offered this exploration around resolve and wisdom, he gave a guided meditation into the present moment. He said, start looking at your experience right now. This is what it means to not neglect wisdom. Start looking at, how is the body right now? How is the mind right now? He was talking to somebody who was pretty advanced in practice, and so he didn't have to go through much of the theory. He just took him right into a guided meditation. And yet, to me, this points to where this wisdom head, what not neglecting wisdom means, ultimately. First, we may have to get some understanding of what the direction of the wisdom is. I mean, this essentially is kind of the beginning of the resolve, is what direction are we going? If we have a resolve that we want to fulfill, you know, we have to have a sense of where we're going. What is it that we want to accomplish? Our relationship, so much of a relationship to resolve is, the word resolve or resolution, many of us associate with, New Year's resolutions. And, what do we do with those? We typically, on New Year's Day, we make a resolve to do something or other, and so we set some kind of direction. Yeah. I would say that the wisdom of the Buddha, the insight of the Buddha, is much more directly about this mind and body. And I mentioned New Year's Eve in terms of our usual relationship to resolves. Resolution is that we make a resolve on New Year's Eve to, I don't know, lose weight or do something like that.
About
Believing in time. He has a lot to explore around what we experience in our mind and bodies. And as we explore that, we begin to understand a different relationship to time and space, for sure, that there is a kind of a construction of that. But let's set that aside for now. So, you know, mostly our relationship to resolve is this kind of once a year thing where we make a resolve and, you know, maybe it's successful, maybe it's not. So that kind of, you know, I'm going to do this thing. So we set a direction, but we don't necessarily know how to follow through. At least that was my experience a lot with my New Year's resolutions. I didn't know how to follow through. And so I think that what the Buddha means here by resolve is not a one-time thing. It's not something where he's saying, you know, just, okay, set your direction and then forget about it. Every day, every moment, we need to be remembering, what is the direction? What are my priorities? How do I want to live my life? And he points to the wisdom around suffering being a really good direction for living our lives. So this is the kind of the beginning place of the resolve, and yet we can't just leave it there. We can't just say, okay, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, I'll do that, and then forget about it. So the wisdom, the not neglecting wisdom, basically means keeping it in mind. So we have a sense perhaps of understanding. We have to start with a kind of an intellectual understanding of what does it mean to enter into the present moment? What does it mean to explore the ways in which we kind of block ourselves from really entering the present moment? The key energies that keep us from really entering into the present moment are greed, aversion, and delusion. And so we begin. I'm going to have to hold off on questions for now. Let's wait. I'll try to get to questions later. Thanks. So we'll exploring greed, aversion, and delusion, we begin to recognize that they're kind of in our way. They are blocking us from actually meeting the present moment. And so we begin to be curious about greed, aversion, and delusion themselves. So that this practice of entering into the present moment, I mean, it sounds great. It sounds like, you know, sure, present moment. Lovely, wonderful. But what happens when we actually begin to look at it? From this perspective of wisdom, we begin to see that so much of our what's going on in there is not very pleasant. It's not very helpful. We see that our minds are full of judgments and opinions and views and ideas and reactions, so that the understanding of what does it mean to fully enter into the present moment also means that we, while understanding that those things are in the way of entering into the present moment, we don't simply deepen into this moment by trying to flip a switch and say, oh, aversion is happening, that's not useful, let me stop that. Or anger is happening, that's in the way of really deeply being here, let me stop that. Really what we do is we open to what's here now, which is that aversion or that anger or that confusion or that frustration. This is part of our journey, is opening to the messy bits, the difficult stuff. And so it takes resolve. It takes patience, it takes commitment to keep going, to keep watching, to be willing to meet that energy, those difficult energies. There's a big difference. So a key in this exploration of the present moment, this resolve for wisdom, a key in it is that there's a difference between being with a difficult or a reactive state and being reactive. If we're being angry or being frustrated, we're kind of embedded in it. We're acting out on it. There's a huge difference if we can actually turn it and be curious, what is it like for a human being to feel this? What is the human experience of this state, of this reactivity? It turns the mind around to look at that in a very different way. And this is the perspective of wisdom, a being with an experience rather than being in or kind of following that experience. And there's a wisdom that develops as we make that exploration. One of the key wisdoms that happens there, I mean, wisdom is such a funny word. When I first started hearing, one of my teachers uses this word a lot, one of my Burmese teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya. And when I first started practicing with him, I was a little mystified by what he meant by wisdom. And he used it all the time. It's like he talked about it as a thing, almost as a personality or as a function. And it is a function, actually. It is a capacity of our minds. It is an understanding. Maybe we could say understanding. Understanding develops. Wisdom develops. Understanding develops as we begin to watch and witness our experience from the inside. As we watch and witness anger from the inside, one of the understandings that happens is anger hurts. It doesn't feel good to be angry in the moment. This is part of our journey of wisdom and understanding, that we recognize this. Wisdom is letting us know. Understanding is letting us know. This state of mind, this reactive state, is not actually helpful in the present moment. Our belief about it, our perspective about it, our usual perspective about reactivity is that acting out on that reactivity will get me something, will get me somewhere. So we're in our kind of usual perspective of journey there. Like, I'm going to get from A to B. The anger is a way to get me from A to B in order to get what I want or get rid of what I don't want. Likewise, for many other of the reactive states that we have, there are ways to get us from A to B. But in the process, A doesn't feel very good. So in a way, what our whole way of being on a journey is like with following these reactive emotions is a willingness to abandon any kind of well-being here and now for the possibility, through acting on that reactivity, for some kind of moment of getting something that I want or getting rid of something that I don't want, some kind of moment of happiness, a feeling of I'm in control or I've got what I want at some point in the future. And yet, all we have is now. And so the wisdom of the Buddha asks us to come into now, to recognize, okay, this reactive state now is not conducive to well-being. It begins to create a new perspective on anger, a perspective that we might begin to recognize, well, maybe this isn't the way towards well-being. Maybe there's another way. And indeed, if we keep exploring the present moment experience, we find the releasing of reactivity has its own ease, its own peace, its own well-being that is unlike any other kind of well-being. that you've experienced, the release of that. The mind begins to recognize this is the way. It takes some faith, it takes a leap of trust to recognize that actually going through that uncomfortable experience of being with the anger is useful. It also takes a leap of faith to recognize that, or to trust that, there's another motivating force in the heart that can accomplish things in the world besides reactivity. So this is part of what the Buddha pointed to with this exploration of wisdom, not neglecting wisdom. And this resolve to not neglect wisdom, we can't just set it on the shelf, kind of like we do our New Year's resolutions. We set the New Year's resolution on the shelf sometimes and just hope that, I don't know what we do, we just think it magically will happen, I don't know. Any kind of resolution takes a continual meeting of that, orienting. This is the direction I'm headed. Can I make choices in alignment with that direction? So wisdom. And then truthfulness, the second resolve. This truthfulness, we might consider it as the truthfulness of speaking truth, but I think it's actually a deeper kind of truth. The truth of what is actually true in this moment. You know, what is actually true in this moment? So much of our perspective on what's true in this moment is more based on beliefs and views and opinions than on what's actually happening in this moment. You know, we have a belief around, what kind of an example can I give of this? Well, let's take even something as simple as an agenda, a kind of an orientation towards a task that needs to be accomplished. There's a function of our minds that when we're trying to accomplish a task, there's a focusing or a narrowing of the attention down to the pieces of information that are useful to accomplish that task. It's a psychological function. The psychologists call it selective attention. It's very well documented, well understood, that if you've got a particular task to do something, you may well miss something very obvious, not see something very obvious, because the mind is focused in on accomplishing a task. So it's a function of our minds. It's a function of our minds. So, you know, there's a study that was done. I think many of you have heard me talk about this, but I'll describe it just briefly. There was the study about selective attention, and people were asked to watch a video of people passing basketballs between people on a basketball court, and they were asked to count the number of times a basketball passed between the people. And they finished the video, they asked them how many times, and pretty much everybody could answer that question. You could focus in and watch the basketball being passed, and they could answer the question. But then a couple of people actually noticed there might have been something else, like, was there a gorilla in that video? And indeed, there had been a guy in a gorilla suit that had kind of walked through the basketball game. Most people did not see the gorilla. That's a natural function of the mind, you know, that we focus in. That's not so frightening. I mean, it's kind of, wow, that's pretty amazing. I didn't see the gorilla. But what is frightening is that when showed the video back, many people being shown that video back said, that has to be a different video because I would have seen the gorilla. So the people didn't believe that it was the same video because they believed they would have seen it. They believed they would have seen it. This is delusion. This is the mind that can't recognize that it's not necessarily seeing the truth of what's happening all the time. We think our eyes are like cameras. We think our ears are like microphones, just picking up all the information. But our attention is very selective.
We are like that. We're only using so little of our brain, and we have potential to use a little more.
It's true.
That we're capable of going on that, but we're limited to ourselves.
It's true. So the belief that we're seeing things clearly, seeing things as they are, when actually we're seeing things in a very selective way, that's a kind of a delusion that we need to recognize. We need to understand that our perception is conditioned. Our perception, the way we take in the world, is not necessarily an accurate representation of reality. And so this is preserving the truth. To recognize, I mean, preserving the truth for that, the people in the video would be saying, wow, I didn't see the gorilla. You know, that would be preserving the truth. Denying the truth is, it was a different video. So when we meet our experience, we are often meeting with a filter, a view, a perspective of some kind that is preventing us from seeing what is actually here. And to me, this is much more the depth of what this resolve for truth means. That we explore opening to what is actually happening in this moment. And that basically includes that we recognize that our perception, the mechanisms of our mind function in ways that aren't perfect recorders. And we have to recognize and acknowledge our perspective is a perspective and not necessarily truth. At one point, in asked about preserving the truth, the Buddha said, well, we preserve the truth when we say, my belief is thus. This is what I believe. Or perhaps, this is what I perceive. Rather than, this is what's there. This is what's true. We preserve the truth when we recognize this perspective is limited. So this is a part of what we're asked to explore also in this resolve for truth.
Does Buddha believe in the power of belief or medicine?
I'll take questions later. The third resolve is the resolve to let go. And the letting go here refers to the letting go of basically greed, aversion, and delusion. You know, the things that are in the way of actually entering into here and now. Relinquishing our habits of greed, aversion, and delusion. And yet that relinquishment doesn't come by simply saying, I'm going to stop that. As I mentioned before, the relinquishment is in my experience, at least, the relinquishment of greed, the relinquishment of aversion, the relinquishment of delusion comes through the wisdom, the understanding, which happens through the meeting of it, being with anger, being with frustration, being with confusion, being with hatred, being with prejudice, being with all of our being with love, being with generosity, being with the wholesome states as well. Being with the experience begins to head us towards the release of the difficult states, the reactive states, and the strengthening of the beautiful states. The practice, mindfulness with wisdom, has that kind of amazing property that as we orient towards our experience with mindfulness and wisdom, when we see anger in our minds, it creates the conditions for that anger to be understood, and through that understanding, it releases itself. So the relinquishment happens through the wisdom, through the understanding. The cultivation of the more beautiful qualities happens also through that understanding. As we meet our the beautiful states of love, of peace, of when they arise, mindfulness and wisdom create the conditions for them to strengthen, for them to get to grow. And so the relinquishment that happens isn't something that we do. It's not something that we say, I'm going to let go of anger. We explore anger through the perspective of wisdom, and the understanding lets the anger go, supports the anger to release. It lets go of itself as it is understood. So the relinquishment that's being talked about here isn't something we have to let go of. It's not something we have to do. We have to commit to that wisdom. We aim ourselves through the resolves with the direction of the wisdom and understanding. Aims us in that direction. And everything follows from that. The relinquishment that, and the fourth resolve, the resolve for peace, also follows from that. We get tastes of that peace as we explore with our mindfulness and wisdom, as we explore the moment. We even, in the middle of being with anger, can feel a moment, oh, this is just anger. And there can be a feeling of peace around being with the anger. So we get little tastes of that mind that is okay with what's here. So our resolves, these resolves, this direction, they serve a kind of direction for us over a long stretch of time. The Buddha did talk about this journey, this unfolding path of practice, as being a gradual path, a long journey. And yet, there's also, sometimes it's said that the path of practice is good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. There's moments of insight, of understanding, of peace, of ease that happen all through. And this begins to show us we're headed in the right direction. So it kind of confirms for us that we're headed in a skillful direction. As we see, as we begin to feel moments of well-being, maybe even more than moments of well-being. So the resolves are kind of a long arc of practice. They're the direction that we're headed. And yet that resolve isn't something we just, again, it's a moment by moment thing. It's something that informs our choices now. What does it mean to meet this moment with wisdom rather than confusion? What might it mean to meet this moment with truth rather than deception? What might it mean to meet this moment with peace so our choices happen in the moment What are our priorities? What are our priorities, and how do we want to live our lives? One day, I was washing dishes, and I noticed a flash of impatience while I was washing the dishes. And as I saw that, it was just a little flash of impatience, and I was pretty present, so I noticed that flash, and I felt it, and I felt the suffering of that flash of impatience. And in that moment, the mind reflected or recognized on the really fleeting nature of life. My mind had the thought, I don't know how long I'm going to be here for. Is this the way I want to spend my time, being impatient? This might be my last moment, washing these dishes. Is this the way I want to spend this moment? This is, too, a piece of the wisdom that helps us really enter into this moment. The truth that we do not know. We do not know when will be our last moment. And how do we want to spend our time? It's not depressing for me to reflect on this impermanence of life. It actually creates the conditions for more real willingness to be on this path and orient my life in a direction that feels skillful and wholesome. This direction of wisdom, of truth, of relinquishment and of peace. And in that moment of recognizing that, this might be my last moment. Is this how I want to spend it? That was kind of like wisdom that arose in the mind in that moment. It wasn't something I thought. It wasn't something like I dragged in. It arose. It was like understanding was there to support me in that moment. And so that understanding supported the impatience to release, the relinquishment of the impatience happened because of that wisdom. And so this remembering our direction, I think this is a big part of the journey. It's remembering that we're on a path. Remembering what's important to us. And it can be framed in so many different ways. For some, what may be most important might feel like it's love. For others, it might feel like understanding. For others, it might be generosity. For others, it might be truth is what's important. So it can be framed in many different ways, but what's important for you? How do you want to live your life? Aim yourself in the direction with wisdom, with truth, with letting go of what's unnecessary, cultivating a heart of peace. And so now I'll take some questions, if there's any questions or... Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. So I'll say a couple things. It's in meditation, usually, when we catch ourselves being with a story, we notice when we notice that a story is happening, very natural for that story to go because usually it doesn't have much basis to keep going. And so it's very natural, unless there's some kind of an emotion underneath that story. And in that case, we might explore being with the emotion instead of being with the thoughts. So that's a really helpful exploration. And yet there is a way to to know that we're thinking while we're thinking. It is possible, and it's a good thing that it's possible, because we have to think in our lives. You know, we have to plan, we have to take care of ourselves, we have to know what we are going to be doing. And so there's a way, we do have to think. Now, there's a lot of thinking that we do in our lives that is unnecessary, and so it's useful to recognize, is this thought useful or not? It is possible to know that we're thinking while we're thinking, kind of mindfully know that we're thinking while we're thinking. And it's kind of like one of my teachers calls it a 50-50 mindfulness. We know the content. It's possible to be aware of content. It's possible to be aware of what we're thinking about and at the same time know how we are with it. So my teacher talks about 50% of the attention knowing the content, knowing what we are engaged in thinking about, and 50% of the attention knowing how are we with that. And so you can explore this. So it's a daily life practice more than a meditation practice, I would say, this kind of practice. It's more of a daily life exploration, and it's useful in daily life because we need to, if we think that we can't be aware while thinking, vast chunks of our daily life are off limits for mindfulness. And it is possible. So a couple ways to explore this, one a couple of the key ways that I like to suggest, when you're reading, at first it might be a little bit of a back and forth. Take in a sentence. Read. Now, do this if you read the newspaper, you know. Take in a headline. Read a headline and then stop. How are you with that content? Words are incredibly powerful for us. We read something, whew, it creates a response. So read something, feel how you are with it. Maybe then read another headline or read a few sentences of the article. How are you with it? So that you start with a back and forth, because we need to do a back and forth at the beginning. But over time, it gets to the place where we can be reading and knowing how we are simultaneously. We can be engaged in essentially taking in the content of somebody else's thoughts and knowing how we are with it. And then likewise, we can do it with writing. So again, reading and writing kind of slows things down a little bit. Writing is being with the contents of our own thoughts in a slightly slowed down way. So writing an email, maybe a particularly charged email, or writing a message to somebody. Write it, stop. Write a sentence, stop. How are you with that? What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about how the other person is going to respond? Are you thinking about how you want to do something, or how you want them to feel a certain way? What's going on? So again, you know, you've got the possibility of slowing it down a little bit with reading and writing. And that begins to develop the skill to begin to see, okay, I'm thinking this right now, and I'm aware that I'm thinking it. And how does it impact me, and how might it impact somebody else for this to be said? So it's a very, very useful practice. Yeah. Yeah.
Wondering how we might think about resolve with respect to energy level and fatigue and obstacles. Especially when we use that word resolve, you know, we may have made that resolution before. I know I'm finding as I get older, I'm like, oh, well, I'm resolving, but I know that I've made this resolution before, so why would the result be different? And you know, it doesn't necessarily have the same freshness or newness or enthusiasm that it might have had when I was younger, but you just keep resolving and again.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's really helpful to look at, resolve is very related to energy and patience. And when you're low energy, when you're tired, the energy has to be light. So it's more keeping it in mind as opposed to like trying to pick it up and say, I'm going to do this. It's a much lighter thing. So it's like, okay, yeah, do the best you can given the circumstances. And sometimes there'll be more energy for acting on, you know, actually acting. And sometimes it may need to be more, you know, really settled back, really relaxed. Just what can I do now? Well, actually what I can do now is rest. So, yeah, and we have to stop, unfortunately.